Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's been a few days since the Fox News debate between California Governor Gavin Newsom and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's also a Republican presidential candidate. The debate was moderated by conservative host Sean Hannity, and it was billed as a red state versus blue state debate. If you watch, you know that it was full of one-liners, a lot of arguing, a lot of talking over each other on a long list of issues. Both governors claim victory. Both parties believe that they came out on top. By now, you've probably heard a lot of the sound bites from this debate. So we're going to move past the zingers and dig into the rhetoric through a California lens, notably for Governor Newsom. The big question that we're going to dig into is why. Why did both agree to this debate? And what did they each get out of it? Here is what each governor had to say moments after the debate.
Like, I know some of these Republican debates, and when you have eight people up there, it's hard to do a really good debate. Then they did seven. And I didn't get a question for the first 25 minutes. And then we did one where we only had five. It was a little bit better. Maybe this next one will be less. But I do think there's something to have a one-on-one debate, 90 minutes. You can cover more ground. You'd be able to make more points. I don't think Joe Biden will ever debate again. I don't think he's willing to do it. And I don't think Donald Trump will ever debate again. I don't think he's willing to do it. So if you're not willing to debate, then you shouldn't be running. You should show up and do it. So I'd love to debate Donald Trump. I'll debate Biden. I'll debate any of these people because ultimately the future of the country is at stake.
I didn't expect it to be, you know, a hand-holding exercise. I mean, I'm on Fox News. This is Fox News, hardwired with a point of view and a bias that's well expressed, this doom loop of Fox News, every single night. And you have their most popular conservative host, and you've got a candidate who's platformed on Fox every other night. So what do you expect? I wasn't expecting cookies and cream.
Joining us today are two veterans of the Sacramento political world. Republican Rob Stutzman is a political strategist and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Democrat Robin Swanson is also a political strategist and served as the communications director for the Speaker of the California State Assembly. Thank you both for being here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so it's been like 4 days or 4 or 5 days. You've had time to let this marinate. You know, from each of your perspectives, what did each governor gain from participating in a debate like this? Rob, I'll start with you.
Well, their incentive is different than most debates because they're not trying to persuade, you know, swing voters. They're each playing to their base. So DeSantis, who is having trouble, is losing traction in the Republican nomination field, had an opportunity to be on Fox News prime time, and he wanted to own a lib. So that's what he tried to do. And for Newsom, he gets to play to future primary voters, Democrat primary voters, if he were to run, showing that he can be someone who can fight against a conservative bully like DeSantis. So from that objective, I think they probably each got out of it what they were looking for. Mm.
Robin, I don't recall a debate like this ever happening before. I mean, how are you reflecting on what happened on Thursday?
Well, I do think, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom really didn't have a lot to lose going into this. He went into a stacked deck. Clearly, he went on Fox News. And I do think Ron DeSantis had more to lose because this was his audience. I haven't seen anything like this before, except for, in some ways, it was so anachronistic. It was unusual in that, you know, neither of these people are likely to be the candidates in 2024 for president. But it was predictable in that it was three white males. It was a Republican in a red tie and a Democratic in a blue tie. And it was very Fox News, just straight out of the playbook. So in some ways, it felt not 2023 to me. I would have rather have seen Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris. I would have rather seen former Governor Nikki Haley. I would have rather seen just interesting and different voices that reflect the reality that is 2023. And this to me felt very 1960.
Mm. Okay, so going back to like 1960s, just, you know, vibes, yeah, there, and also how each governor was really playing to their bases. What did the country gain from witnessing and taking in a debate like this, Rob?
Well, nothing. You know, there's a clamoring for other choices with voters than having Biden-Trump rematch. In fact, that's a very unpopular proposition. So what you saw on stage the other night was an alternative proposition, even a younger generation for both parties. But there was very little about it that was appealing, I think, to the part of the country that really wants some different options. So to that extent, what the voters get out of that is possibly to consider that the parties can't offer you something better than what you're getting if you don't like the Biden-Trump rematch. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's going to be people who still start to continue to look beyond the parties for something else because the parties are not satisfying what the demand is for right now in the public square.
Looking at Republican voters, you know, particularly in California, I mean, Governor Newsom hammered DeSantis on his polling numbers nationally, and they haven't really fared that well. It's been on a downward trajectory in California, according to like the most recent Berkeley IGS poll. Back in February, DeSantis was actually leading former President Trump among California likely Republican voters. You look at October, that is now flipped and done a 180. What's happening here when it comes to California Republicans?
Well, the same thing is happening to Republicans nationally, which is they are consolidating around the former president, and they have been drawn to his side by the legal challenges that he faces. Challenges, I mean, why sugarcoat indictments? But so the irony is, and this is what's so frustrating, I think, for people that, you know, don't want Trump to be president again, is that as he has been held accountable or potentially held accountable by the judicial system, it has actually cleaved stronger support to him amongst Republican voters, including Republican voters in California.
Hmm. Robin, what stands out to you about that? I mean, I know you're a Democratic strategist,
yeah,
but looking at the Republican Party and how it's changed in just a matter of, you know, 6 to 7 months.
Well, I mean, I think it's remarkable that Donald Trump is still 50 points ahead of all of his opponents in the Republican primary. And I was listening to your program earlier and heard Liz Cheney, you know, talking about her potential candidacy. And so I think Republicans are looking for viable alternatives because it's, I think, still shocking to so many of us as observers that he is the candidate to beat for Republicans. Just in returning to the debate a little bit, I think what lives on from the debate are sort of the one-liners and the zingers, and that's what's going to be used over and over again on social media. But if you look at that debate in context of the previous Republican debates, which had 12 million people watching, this debate had less than 5 million people watching. And I was looking and it looked like The Golden Bachelor had 6 million people watching and the same night. So, you know, that debate itself isn't going to stand the test of time, but those zingers are going to outlive that. And maybe outlive the Golden Bachelor. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, how did this benefit Governor Newsom? Was this like a highlight reel for him?
I think a little bit. I think he did it because he could. And honestly, like, he went into enemy territory. I think it was a little bit of bravado that he went and did that. And I do think he rallies the base for Joe Biden. So although I don't believe in any shape that his base is watching Fox News. So, again, it's the highlight reel that the Newsom folks are going to walk away with on that.
And if there's a downside for Newsom, I think it's this. We know now that more people are disapproving than approving of his job performance. And there seems to be an exasperation that there's big problems here that he got dinged for in that debate that aren't getting fixed. And he's running around the world, literally, if not the country, trying to raise his national profile. So I think there's a sense voters want to see him do the day job. He returned the next day to see the legislative analyst project a $58 billion deficit for next year. So at some point, I think Newsom does have to consider, is he hurting himself politically and whittling away political capital that he's going to need to do some tough things on the governing front in California? And if he's going to be a president someday, he needs some good turnaround stories here. And it's not going to be easy to do.
Given that there were, you know, some 5 million people who tuned into this debate, I mean, do you think one of them was former President Trump, Rob?
Oh, you know, Trump was watching. He can't help but watch.
And what about President Biden? I mean, you know, Newsom, the governor, said that he was there to really push the Biden-Harris record, you know, that he is an advocate, he is a mouthpiece, a surrogate of the party, of the administration. Is Governor Newsom the cheerleader that, you know, Biden and Harris can't be at the moment?
I do think he brings to the table progressive voters that Joe Biden can't necessarily cater to right now as he's working to appeal to a broader audience. So I think there's that piece of it. And I think, you know, Gavin Newsom, opportunity, meeting chance, meeting preparation, you know, he is preparing for a run eventually, but he very much is in the Biden and Kamala Harris corner for now, because that's what, you know, that's what's the ticket's looking like in 2024.
You know, optics do play a role in all of this, presentation, demeanor, cadence. You know, who do you think did better between the two?
I think they were both unlikable. let me put this. I mean, Frank Bruni, so liberal columnist, New York Times, described Newsom as toxic smugness. I don't think that's the New York Times review that the Newsom team was looking for. So you do have to, you can fight for your base and maybe win a slugfest like that. But I think both those candidates have to step back and take a look. Are we really presenting ourselves as likable, empathetic people that are deserving to be on national tickets?
I actually think the big winner came out of that was Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
And I think that's because Ron DeSantis did not look like a grown-up in that room.
Yep.
I think she looks like a grown-up compared to him, and that she was sitting back, relaxing, and enjoying that show that he, I think, failed epically at.
Agree.
Yeah. Do either of you want to watch a debate like this again?
No, please.
No.
Well, you know, but it could have been substantive. This is what's really disappointing is, and not that we had this expectation, but there are like legitimate red state, blue state policies, you know, governing principles that could be discussed. And obviously Sean Hannity was not going to offer that type of substantive forum.
Well, and Sean Hannity kept saying he didn't want to be the hall monitor, but that's the job. That is the entire job of being a moderator,
yeah.
Is to allow the audience to actually hear somebody's perspective, which was really difficult to do when two men were shouting over each other.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with two Sacramento political strategists, Robin Swanson and Rob Stutzman, about the DeSantis-Newsom debate, which happened last Thursday on Fox News. You know, looking ahead, we're rounding the quarter very quickly to a big year, 2024, and a presidential election. Do you see any scenario as it stands now where it would not be Biden-Trump in 2024?
Oh, I still think, you know, the aforementioned Nikki Haley, I think, has a 25-30% chance still through the nomination process. I mean, there's steps to that I could go into. But no, the Republican nomination is not completely locked yet for Trump. But obviously, unless Joe Biden were to step aside willingly or forced to through circumstance, he's clearly going to be the Democrat nominee.
I mean, I hope for the sake of our country that the Republicans find someone other than Trump, even if that candidate is harder to beat, just for the sake of democracy. I will say that Ron DeSantis did not look very presidential, but I think Donald Trump is the least presidential president that we have ever had. So, you know, far be it for me to say to count out Donald Trump, because he still somehow is trouncing everybody else in the polls. So I'm afraid that that's the ticket that we're stuck with.
Do you think Governor Newsom, I mean, he has denied this repeatedly, but that he is a shadow candidate for President Biden?
Listen, he has to be President Biden's biggest cheerleader. And I think if anybody understands that, it's President Biden, who was in the wings for a very long time. And he is preparing for an eventual run, but not in 2024.
Yeah, and this also follows, I mean, some pretty high-profile trips to China, also hosting APEC. And then you also have this debate against Governor DeSantis. This all happened within, you know, maybe 6 weeks of each other. I mean, is that just a coincidence, or is that kind of building a momentum and kind of a profile on a national stage?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely building a national profile, and understandably so. It's a very short list of candidates who could be president of the United States, and he is one of them. So he has to honor that, and he has to, you know, follow those instincts. And he's gotten some really big opportunities under his belt in the last couple of months. And, you know, I don't think anybody is holding that against him for taking those opportunities.
I would say maybe the voters here are. Now, you can say, what does that matter? It's not like he's going to get recalled again or could ever be beat by a Republican. But I do think he's done. I agree with Robin. He's done a good job of raising his profile in a lot of ways. Very effective. But there's still the day job, and the day job is going to get really hard. And he's about 18 months from being a lame duck governor. And so it's going to be hard to excel at both things at once. There's very few models where that can be done. You kind of have to choose.
Finally, do you think, you know, when it comes to debates that don't involve politicians that are running for the same office, do you think this is going to happen again? That this is the start of something?
With DeSantis,
just because they're not running against each other, and they took a debate stage. I mean, do you think this could happen with other, you know, with other governors or people in elected office?
You know, and there's actually, Robin cited the '60s earlier. This would happen more in the '60s, where there would be just debates between folks. Reagan debated, I can't remember who, but before he was even governor. So if we're going to continue to do this, then let's just get to a healthier format, which means it's probably not the Hannity show. you know, we need to get the firing line or something where it can be more civil and substantive. But I think it'd be great if we could get to that substance level for the country to see these debates.
I think it can happen in a non-election year, but we're about to enter an election year. So I think that's going to narrow the field a lot. And these sort of asymmetrical wish list debates are not going to happen in 2024. But, you know, maybe after. I don't know.
Well, Robin and Rob, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That was fun. Robin Swanson and Rob Stutzman are political strategists with an intense focus on the California lens based in Sacramento. And they're providing analysis of the Governor Newsom, Governor DeSantis debate, which happened on Fox News last week. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Barbershops have long been more than just a haircut and style. They offer connection and community. In Sacramento, two barbershops are taking conversations a step further, offering free therapy sessions to break down the stigma of opening up and getting help. The program is called Cut to the Chase, and it's a monthly meetup that offers a space for Black men to talk about the everyday challenges they face. The program is offered by the Greater Sacramento Urban League, and the meetups take place every month at two barbershops, one in South Sacramento at Taper's Barbershop and Salon, as well as in North Sacramento at Five Star Fades. We're going to learn more about how this all began and how it's also expanding to help more people address their mental health needs and wellness. Dr. Troy M. Williams is the Chief Impact Officer, and Ronnie Cobb is the Senior Director of Partnerships at the Greater Sacramento Urban League. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, this was a treat to learn about because I learned about this through Tony Rodriguez. He's a news fellow here at CAP Radio. I want to start off with just both of your connections to a barbershop. What are your connections to the barbershop? Ronnie?
You know, it's funny. Growing up, my uncle has owned a barbershop back home in Tennessee for over 55 years. And so I always said that's where some of the best and worst advice can possibly come for a man of color. So it's just been a part of my growing up.
How about you, Dr. Williams?
Well, I've always socialized and hung out at the barbershop. Many of myself and my peers' first jobs were at barbershops, sweeping up hair and socializing. So it's always been the heartbeat of our communities.
How did Cut to the Chase begin?
Well, when I moved here about a year ago to Sacramento, and when I moved here, our CEO, Dwayne Crenshaw, said there was a grant opportunity with Dignity Health. He said that I want to address social determinants of health. We're just coming off of COVID. How can we assist Black men with coping with, you know, everyday issues? So I began to think through a lot of the research that I conducted in my doctoral program and thought, what were the staples in our community? And for me, it's always been a barbershop. Now, I wanted to think through, who can we connect to, right? So I wanted to connect with a therapist, and I also wanted to connect with other folks who worked in health services. So we connected with Capital City Black Nurses Association and also Heart of the Matter Counseling, and we began to get together with these barbershops and wanted to address, you know, these mental health issues and such.
Ronnie, when you heard about this, I mean, you have, you know, really deep connections to Sacramento. You're a graduate from Sac State. You have been in Sacramento since you were a kid. What stood out to you about, you know, creating an environment, you know, wellness and therapy via a barbershop?
Well, I think to Dr. Williams' point, it's the fact that the barbershop has always been a safe haven of education. I think that I can think about growing up as a kid and it was almost like a rites of passage, because I remember sitting back and listening to my dad and Mr. Lacey and the other barbers in the shop just talk about life, experiences, relationships, religion. And just that's where, like, one of the people came and told us, he goes, that's where you learned your game. You know, you learned about some life experiences through these passages and stories of all these different men and young and old. And it was just always, it's always been a safe place and a part of my life. Mm.
Troy, you mentioned that during your doctoral program, you know, there's this, I guess, phrase, or it's called third spaces, mm-hmm. and a barbershop is a third space. What is it about these third spaces that make them inviting, comfortable, and there's like a disarming quality about them?
Absolutely. So there was a sociologist that created this term third spaces. So your first space is your home, your second space is your job, and the third space is a place that you can come to and, you know, let your hair down and be comfortable. And in our community, a barbershop or salon has often been these spaces, and they have people there. You just show up and you're just coming there to just talk and be comfortable and things, right? So that has when people have access to this, you're able to address the social determinants of health and many other things.
Mm. When it comes to, you know, this program being offered, it's been about, what, 6-7 months now since it first officially started. Mm-hmm. What has the response been so far?
The response has been great. We've had over 450 men and boys that have come through. I think people come in, it's a pleasant surprise, because it's not therapy where you're on a couch and being judged. You're literally sitting in a chair, getting your hair cut, or just overhearing a conversation or coming to engage in a conversation. And I would really trust to believe that everybody has to feel they've left better than they came. Hmm.
What does that say to you that more than 400 people have shown up to these events? Because something like this hasn't really been offered in Sacramento before. And I think, you know, when we talk about mental health and talking about it openly and vulnerably, you know, throughout history for generations, that always hasn't been the easiest thing.
I think it shows that it's needed and it's important. Many times folks are unaware of the importance of therapy. There's always been a stigma surrounding mental health. And I think that by being able to serve 450 men and them, a lot of them not even being aware that this is therapy that they're experiencing, it just shows how important it is.
What is the age range that you're serving?
We've been fortunate enough to have a gentleman that brought an infant on his lap to one in particular, so that's our youngest, up to a gentleman that's 80 years old that participates regularly also.
Wow.
So anywhere from 9 to 80 is what we've had.
When you get some feedback from people who are going, maybe regulars now who are going to these meetups, what do they tell you? What can you share with us about how meaningful it's been to them?
I think the most meaningful thing, and it is that many of the men ask, how can they then begin to get individualized therapy sessions? So we ensure that we connect them with Heart of the Matter and other therapists that we know throughout Sacramento. So I think that, for me, what I think is the most meaningful thing.
I think the fact that people walk away knowing that they're not alone in this race. You have people that will come in and realize that first, they're of value. It's not about titles. It's not about income. What it does is levels the playing ground, that people realize that we all are in this thing together, and how we deal or have dealt with certain situations many times are very similar, or we're offering advice to people to realize you can get to the next place with help that's available to you too.
What went into partnering with the two barbershops that are taking part of this? Because I'm sure maybe even anecdotally, they understood the power that a barbershop could provide when it comes to wellness.
I think it's interesting because initially when Dr. Williams, we were talking about the Capital City Black nurses were going to identify some locations for us, and which was good. And in the back of my head, I've been going to the same barbershop, which is Tapers, for, God, 20 years. And I just thought about the conversations we've had in those shops and the type of personalities, the type of room we would need where people aren't judged. They can come and feel very comfortable. And places like them and Five Star Fades are just ideal, because when you walk into these places, first, the guys are already very engaging anyway, and everybody's welcome. But the fact that you can come in and they heard that they could offer information with professionals in line also about mental health, they got very excited about it, because they are therapists already. They're doing this thing on a weekly, monthly basis. Some have been head customers for 25 years that they've offered advice to just about life experiences. So to have these two locations that we have now are just a blessing.
You know, Troy, when it comes to how this is funded, I mean, you received a grant, mm-hmm. you know, so how does that actually shake out and work out when you partner with the barbershops and the therapists?
Absolutely. So we have two funders, CalMHSA and Dignity Health. And both of those fund, so we pay our barbershops a stipend to utilize their shops, and we also pay Heart of the Matter and also Capital City Black Nurses. So we all bring them on as partners and pay for their personnel and such.
Was there a framework you were building upon when you wanted to create this here in Sacramento? Does this exist elsewhere?
Well, not necessarily, but yes, this framework absolutely does. I have to give a shout out to Mr. Aaron Perry out of Madison, Wisconsin. I saw him build a men's health center inside of a barbershop where people are able to get their blood pressures checked. They're able to get their diabetes regulated and they check glucose levels. I saw him build that and I said, and I recognize how powerful that was for that community. And I wanted to see how can that be replicated addressing mental health services. So I have to give kudos to Aaron for setting that blueprint for me.
It's one thing to have an idea and to apply a blueprint to something, but how, when seeing it come to fruition, you know, 6-7 months in, has it met or exceeded your expectations?
Absolutely. For me, I would love to hear your perspective on this as well, Ronnie. I think for me, being able to see the folks excited about getting therapy sessions, right? So after a session would end, people giving me a call and saying, how can I get a therapist? I heard you speaking how amazing therapy has been. And I didn't expect that at all, right? Because there's a very huge stigma about receiving therapy, especially with men, I would say.
I think something very close to home is that a month back, my son Kyle played at Capital Christian, played basketball there. And one of his teammates had come home for a visit and was in an accident and was killed. And later on in that week, there were some shootings that had occurred in the North area. There were some shootings that then occurred in the South area as well. And so we pivoted and made the topic of that particular meeting at both locations about dealing with loss. To see those young people come in and have a place to go and understand they were hurting, not knowing how to verbalize everything, but and that loss started, you start hearing men who talked about they lost their mothers 15 years ago, never dealt with it. One of my best friends from elementary school on, his sons came and his eldest son talked about how I've never dealt with my dad's loss because I was told I'm now the man of the family and I've got a man up, quote unquote. So to see all these people come together, one being invited by the barber to come and be a part of this conversation, it's just the fact that we can pivot and customize topics to make sure we impact people right where they are. And it was that was probably one of the most moving sessions that I've been involved in myself.
What I love about that example is that it takes multiple generations to help each other. You know, you're talking about your son, but also being able to talk to elders in the community and, you know, how they would have liked to have maybe taken better care of their mental health. And then that's really powerful and formative for someone, you know, as young as your son.
You think about places where growing up, even in the South, where and even here where people would say things like, well, you know, don't interact with that person, you know, they just can't get right. And when you go back in retrospect to hear these more mature men now saying, I understand what that was. I know what post-traumatic things are now. I know what trauma is now. I know what triggers are now. It's great to hear people be able to add some things to their vocabulary to identify there was nothing wrong with you. There was just something that was going on with you.
Hmm. Dr. Williams, I mean, this is your research, you know, you that was what you focused your doctorate on. How does it feel to see it play out in real life?
It's extremely exciting. I think the most beautiful thing about this is this taking place at the Urban League. Historically, the Urban League has been a staple in the Black community, serving us for over 113 years. And being able to connect folks with these services is just, it's extremely moving.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining with us, I'm talking with Dr. Troy M. Williams and Ronnie Cobb. They are with the Greater Sacramento Urban League. And they're talking about a program called Cut to the Chase, in which men of color meet up at a barbershop for free therapy sessions. And that really is meant to break the stigma of mental health. And they take place once a month at two different barbershops in North and South Sacramento. So you mentioned the Greater Sacramento Urban League. I mean, for those who are just learning about this organization for the first time, how do programs like Cut to the Chase fit into the overall mission of the Greater Sacramento Urban League?
Well, the Urban League was established during the Great Migration. During the Great Migration, people were moving from the South to the North. And when they arrived in these large metropolitan cities, they couldn't find jobs. They couldn't find housing. A group of social workers and civil rights advocates came together to see how can we ensure that these folks have access to these resources. That movement continued to spread throughout the country. Currently, we have over 90 affiliates, and we serve over 300 communities throughout this country. And being able to connect that to the movement of us, this mental health services, has just been extremely exciting to see and witness, and to offer these services to folks.
And this program is, you know, because of grant funding, and grant funding isn't always sustainable, mm-hmm. right? But it's actually going to be expanding. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about how Cut to the Chase is going to be expanding in Sacramento.
You know, it's funny because when we're first talking about the marketing and advertising, the initial group that I reached out to personally was a lot of ladies. And the request was, please send us the men and boys that you care about and love that you think can benefit from such conversations. And they really, really did. Behind that, after it got pretty good, and then the guys were reporting back to these people how much they were learning, it became this other question, so when are you going to do something for the ladies? And so we've been really excited to get the men's place, very good traction with the men now, and now we'll be introducing Cut to the Chase, the Crown Edition, for the ladies also in the new year.
Oh, that's wonderful. So if someone's listening to this and they want to take part, you know, there's two a month, you know, at two different barbershops, you know, so how does it work out? How does it work if someone wants to go?
What they can simply do is they can give us a call directly. They can email. My email address is on a lot of the information. You can go to our website to be able to register also at www.gsul.org. And my direct email address is rcobb@gsul.org and direct line 286-8646, area code 916 also.
What is it meant to the barbershops that are the site for this?
I think they're extremely excited. They love it. I mean, sometimes we just cannot get them to stop talking because they're just so excited about this, right? Because think historically, like Ronnie mentioned earlier, barbers have kind of served as therapists, and they think that they often give pretty good advice and insight. But to have a professional on site to temper their advice sometimes has been very exciting to see. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think when also thinking about like mental health and wellness, you know, obviously we start with ourselves, mm-hmm. but obviously that can have wonderful and powerful ripple effects, mm-hmm. you know, throughout, you know, your community and your mm-hmm. family and your loved ones. And I would imagine the last 6 or 7 months that you've had this program, that you've gotten feedback or seen it yourself, you know, yeah. kind of like the positive change this is happening beyond just a single individual.
Yes.
I think, you know, just to hear back from family members and some of my dearest friends, to have my sister's godmother dial in on our introduction about the women's session from Illinois last week and just talk about how proud she was of what was happening and what would it take to bring it to their state. It's commendable. I just like the fact that the taboo is being sort of knocked around and saying, you know, it's sort of like the pandemic. It was even playing ground for everybody. It impacted everybody, didn't discriminate, and neither does mental health. And so the fact that they realize they can come through here and get some advice that can help them and help the generations to follow them, it's just very been, it's been ideal to see that happen.
And I think the fact that you've had over 400 people turn up in such a short amount of time of all ages and generations, I think demonstrates that, you know, people wanted to break that taboo for themselves, but they just needed a place to do so.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us and sharing this wonderful program.
Oh, we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Troy M. Williams and Ronnie Cobb are with the Greater Sacramento Urban League, and they're discussing a program called Cut to the Chase, in which men of color meet up for a barbershop for monthly sessions, free therapy sessions to break the stigma of Black men and mental health. They take place on the first and second Thursdays of each month in both North and South Sacramento. And of course, we have more information on our Insight page, as well as the addresses as well. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Whether you like it or not, the holiday season is here, which means for a lot of us, the final weeks of the year means getting together with friends and family, of course, for good times. Usually, though, with the backdrop of festive tunes. Speaking of holiday music, the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra is welcoming back its own tradition this weekend. Home for the Holidays has been running for almost three decades. The performance will take place at 3 p.m. this Saturday at the Memorial Auditorium in downtown Sacramento. And this year, the Choral Society and Orchestra will also be honoring the life of one of its longtime members. Here to give us a taste of the show is the group's founder and musical director, Donald Kendrick, and its president, Jim McCormick. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky.
So before we listen to some of the music that people are going to take in this weekend, let's just start with like a scene setter. You know, tell us about the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. How big is it and its mission? Because it goes back for decades.
It does indeed, Vicky. It started way back 28 years ago, unbelievable, when we were the old Sacramento Symphony Chorus. And when that organization met its close, the chorus turned to me and said, "Well, Don, can you keep us together and let's put on some shows?" So we sat down one weekend and thought, well, we'll try this for 1 year and see how things go. And 28 years later, we're still here.
As well as Home for the Holidays too, correct?
Absolutely. And our mission, Vicky, of course, is to provide world-class choral orchestral music for the people of the Sacramento region. And we do that. We do that. We love doing it.
And Home for the Holidays, it's been around pretty much since the inception, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I thought of the title, Home for the Holidays, 28 years ago, and we did our very first concert at the old Community Center Theater. And ever since then, we've been filling the place, and people have been really enjoying that radiant music for the holidays.
What goes into putting a concert like this together, Jim?
I'll tell you, it's great fun. First of all, Don is able to choose amazing repertoire that stimulates both the community members, the audience attendees, but also the orchestra and the chorus. And we generally like to try to find a headliner. Often we'll have puppets, narrators, things like that. So just finding the music and choosing it and that will really challenge everyone. It's one of the early parts of the challenge. And then all the PR, the learning of the music, making sure all that music arrives safely for the orchestra and for the chorus. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that we rented the hall and that we decorated it so beautifully down there. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, Donald, you've been with it since the beginning, you know, so I think about your vision and then, you know, what it looks like now 28 years and counting.
And to me, it's just getting better and better because more and more people are coming and it's just, you know, it's a magical concert. A lot of conductors don't like doing Christmas music or holiday music because it's so distracting for them. But to me, I feel like Father Christmas in this city for over 33 decades, really. I've been bringing music with my Sac State Choir and now with the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra and my Schola Cantorum. And so it's the audience get to sing along in this concert, too. There's a big audience.
There's an interactive component.
Absolutely.
And Vicky, Memorial Auditorium is the perfect choice for this event because of the history. It's almost 100 years old now. And you know that the U-shaped seating in the building creates a sense of connectedness. So at the front of the Memorial Auditorium, we'll have our new risers that are sort of U-shaped. So you have the chorus meeting the attendees who are sitting in a U shape, too. So it's a very warm experience.
Yeah, I love that. Well, let's listen to one of the clips that you sent. This is Deck the Halls. I think about all of the artists that go into creating that sound and how much talent it takes to make it happen.
Our orchestra is really one of the finest orchestras in this city. They are highly trained musicians from all the major conservatories and universities across the country, and they are very, very professional, and they've been with us for so long that it's just a joy to work with these people for all these years.
Well, let's listen to another clip. This is Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Thank you. I mean, from Silent Night to Deck the Halls, you have a lot of classics in there, and you keep bringing people back year after year.
We do. And you know what's wonderful about this concert, Vicki, is that it starts in darkness, and it starts with a candlelit procession, and the choir is all upstairs around the first balcony, all 135, 140 singers with candles in the darkness, and they process down after they sing a glorious piece in the darkness upstairs, all memorized. So it's really quite a spectacular beginning to it.
And every year people look forward to the amazing audience sing-along. And then in the lobby we have Christmas crafts. We also have barbershoppers. So before the concert and during the intermission,
I'll tell you, it
adds to the merriment, the sense of joy when people walk in because they have so many memories associated with that building.
Yeah, and also a sense of community as well, which is so important for the holidays. Yeah. You know, we're all in this together.
That's what great music does. It does draw people together in an old-fashioned way.
It's touching for me because when I turn to conduct the audience and the audience sing-along, I see, you know, thousands of people, and they're holding their children in their arms and their little ones by the hands, and they're all standing, and they're all singing at the top of their voice, and they really do sing. I mean, they really, really sing at the sing-along, and they look forward to that every year. So it's very touching for me.
Well, we're going to listen to the next song. That is Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I'm going to go out on a limb and say a lot of people sing along to that song. And this also brings up a really important point, the choir. You have longtime choir members that are part of this, and you're honoring one of them as well.
We are, definitely. We're honoring a longtime alto, Suzanne Kenyon. 20 years she sang with us. She not only sang with us, but she brought what we call handmade happiness to us. And she did it through her talent, her crafts, her amazing Christmas elves, the stained glass, baked goods every year. Amazing. And so she always went beyond the call of duty. And she had this smile that could warm any building. So we are definitely, Christmas was her favorite time of year. So we're honoring Suzanne Kenyon, who passed away about a month ago. Mm. And it's our pleasure because it's fitting that we honor a person who brought so much light and hope to our lives.
But you bring up a good point, though, Vicki. There are a lot of people in the choir who've been there since, some of them since the very beginning, which is 28 years. You know, it's a long time to be in a choir. Some of them are 10 years, some are 15, some of them are 3 years, some of them are brand new, you know. But there's a good body of people who go back to the very beginning with the.
But it's really a sense of community within a community. Mm-hmm. And then we go out and we bring joy to everyone on their network.
Yeah, an outlet of joy, you know, which is wonderful. And continuing on that theme, we're going to listen to the next song, which is, I think, is also a popular one as well, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose.
And in addition to the choir, you have a soloist, a headliner.
We are bringing up Finn Sagal. His name is Finn Sagal, and he's from La Cañada, which is down in Southern California. He graduated from UCLA with a degree in music, and then he went off to Yale University, and he's in his second year at Yale. He's finishing up now. After he graduates from Yale this spring, he's been accepted into the Chicago Ryan Lyric Opera Company as an artist in residence. So it's a wonderful opportunity for him to work in Chicago in the opera. One of my former singers, Julie Miller, also went through that same program. But this guy, he's like 23 years old, and really a good-looking little kid, and he sounds exactly like Frank Sinatra. Unbelievable. He won the American Songbook competition a couple of years ago down in Southern California, which is huge competition, singing, "Luck be a lady, luck be a lady tonight." Mm-hmm. Unbelievable kid. Frank Sinatra reborn, literally. So he's coming all the way in from Yale tomorrow, Wednesday, and we're going to be here for the weekend to sing some beautiful Christmas songs and holiday songs at the Home for the Holidays with the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra.
What a treat. Yeah, our one of our last songs is actually Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Let's take a quick listen before we wrap up the show. Donald and Jim, thank you so much. It's going to be a great time. 28 years and counting.
28 years and counting, and we're still here, and we love it.
It's a great tradition, and it brings us joy to present it, Vicki.
Yeah, and you bring joy to a lot of other people, too.
And it's Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, so who's doing anything next Saturday, December the 9th, except coming to our concert at Memorial
Auditorium? And there will be tickets at the door.
That's wonderful, and we have more information on our Insight page, too. Donald Kendrick is the founder and musical director of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra, and Jim McCormick is its president. As they mentioned, their annual Home for the Holidays concert will take place this Saturday, December 9th, at 3 p.m. at the Memorial Auditorium on J Street in Sacramento. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can reach out to us, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz, and he's also today's engineer. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.